This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Carlson Fish Oils. Fish oil provides the vital omega-3s, EPA and DHA, which support cardiovascular, brain and nerve, vision, immune system, joint, and skin health. Carlson ensures maximum freshness by managing their fish oils from sea to shelf. All Carlson fish oils are tested by an FDA-registered laboratory for freshness, potency, and purity, and they're available in soft gels and liquid form. For more information, go to carlsonlabs.com. Carlson fish oils are available at fine health food stores nationwide. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and wherever you are, I hope you're warm. As we recover from a bout of very, very inclement weather here in the Northeast, we're digging out and thawing out. Things are remitting a little bit, but not quite enough to allow us to put on our Bermuda shorts and our flip-flops.
I miss that.
Yeah, indeed. You know, just the freedom of leaving the apartment without, you know,
Bundling 10 minutes
of preparation, you know, to have my boots, my, mm-hmm. you know, my scarf.
And my eyeballs are so cold.
Right. And my mittens. So we're going to answer your questions as we do each week. With me today, a familiar voice, Layla Mudin, who is our nutritionist in residence. We work together at our practice here in Midtown Manhattan, near Columbus Circle, adjacent to the park,
and
the Time Warner Building.
Mm-hmm.
So very centrally located. And a good place to have lunch right near us is Whole Foods.
Yes, right across the street.
There's a quick run,
yeah.
5 minutes there, and you know, 5 minutes picking food and head back to the office and chow down. So we're answering questions. Your questions come to us via radio program at AOL.com. And what's in the news? You mentioned something that was kind of intriguing about a new approach to diabetes.
Well, actually, they were, quote, it's a little bit of a sensational headline. Found the cure.
Clickbait. Yeah.
Found the cure to Alzheimer's by accident while looking for something for diabetes.
I wouldn't say that's by accident.
No.
Because we have found a plausible treatment approach to Alzheimer's by dealing with blood sugar.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. They're still not putting together that Alzheimer's is actually a type of diabetes mm-hmm. or an insulin resistance of the brain.
So-called type 3 diabetes. Yes. Where the brain cells mm-hmm. become insulin resistant.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah. And at that point, because it can't deal with glucose properly, does better.
There's
with
a power
ketones.
Failure of sorts.
And it's sort of,
in diabetes, they say water everywhere, but not a drop to drink. And with diabetes, it's glucose everywhere, but not a molecule to burn or to utilize for energy in the mm-hmm. brain. Mm-hmm. So the drug is a triple action anti-diabetic medication that seems to, I guess, potentiate the energy of brain cells and maybe slow the deterioration of brain cells mm-hmm. because it, you know, prevents whatever ages, the advanced glycation end products that occur in diabetes. I mean, that's quite plausible.
Exactly. But, you know, even in reading the article, they just, there's a connection between these two.
Well, it's just by accident, by coincidence. It's like throwing darts at a board.
There's no
logic to that. Yeah. Anyway, another interesting finding this week is that, lo and behold, that there is yet another way to prevent osteoporosis with, of all things, yoga. And, what's interesting about this is they actually did a study on this. It's a scientific paper titled 12-Minute Daily Yoga Routine Reverses Osteoporotic Bone Loss.
Hmm.
And that's pretty good, 12 minutes. Now, some people think of yoga as, you know, it's very gentle. It's, you know, if you really want to build bone, you got to be bench pressing, your body weight,
or, you know, just pounding the pavement or something really violent, but actually yoga is a gentle thing.
It may look like there's not much going on.
Well, there's a lot going on.
There's a lot going on. Yeah. It is indeed a form of strength training.
Yes.
When you're standing in, for instance, the Warrior II position, which is kind of a lunge.
Yeah.
When you're holding that lunge position for as much as 2 minutes or something, it's quite more effective at strengthening those quads, the hamstrings, the butt muscle, than doing several lunges, actually. That's actually been scientifically shown.
Wow.
So, you know, when you're doing the plank position or downward dog or chaturanga, which is coming down into a push-up, these are push-ups. This is strength training.
So we can envision you every morning at about, you know, 7 in the morning, 6 in the morning, Layla the Warrior Princess, you know, with your arms extended and you're, you know, like doing, you know, you in the warrior
posture. Or the crescent position, which is another kind of plank. Not plank, but a lunge.
And, you know, I have to say, I agree with you because I've only recently undertaken yoga. And I consider myself a strong person. You know, I do, you know, weightlifting with squats.
Yeah.
With weight on my shoulders.
Yeah.
And I do cycling, you know, uphill, and I do running. And when I do the yoga, I find it challenging.
It is.
Hold the position.
To hold the position. Now, this is not about, you know, touching your toes. It's not about being super flexible or becoming a human pretzel.
Exactly. That's
the
what I use. That's what I thought yoga was.
Yeah,
I thought it was becoming like a contortionist.
Right.
You know,
right, right.
And it's not.
You know, getting yourself into pigeon pose, doing all of that, warrior one, even chair pose.
Oh,
if you try to hold it for a while, not only with your arms straight up, but if you clasp them together without holding them together, people don't realize this is kind of tough when you're in a sitting in a chair pose
They found in the study, a big study. I mean, who'd have thunk that they'd do a study where they got people to do yoga and they ascertained whether they had improvements in their DEXA scores.
Oh.
741 people joined the study. Between 2005 and 2015, they did DEXA at the beginning and at the end. 227 participants practiced the routine at least every other day for 2 years, so they were consistent. I guess out of the 741, some dropped out.
Mm-hmm.
Their average age was 68 when they entered the study.
Excellent. Good.
And 83% had lower than normal bone density. And what are the results? The results were that there was significant improvement in their bone density, significant increases in bone density in the spine. The hip bone density increased too, but not as significantly. And none of the participants reported bone fractures or other injuries caused by doing yoga, which is good because you can strain yourself during yoga.
You can.
I have actually had a couple of, like, you know, my back spasmed when I did the plow, which is a little bit challenging. It's like you sort of roll back and you know, your legs go behind you and you touch your tiptoes to the floor behind you.
Uh-huh.
And you got to be careful with that. That can put strain on your neck.
Sure.
And in one case, it caused me to go into back spasm. So,
ouch. Oh, golly. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, there are yoga injuries and I think people get a little carried away by it.
That's true. That's true. It's not all about, well, it's hard to do a split anyway.
Right.
So it's not all about that. But no, the asanas, the poses are challenging.
I've always wanted to be James Brown, you know, just get on the stage, you know, like, I feel good, and then do a split, you know, at the end of my act. But I can't quite pull it off.
No, that's okay.
Yeah.
That's okay. Pigeon pose is hard enough.
Right.
No, but this is actually great about yoga. Again, it looks like there isn't a lot going on, but there really is. When you're holding those positions, they're hard to do. That particular muscle that you're working is on fire after a time. And you must breathe through it. This is how we get through our lives. Mm-hmm. We have to remember to breathe. It's a practice in how do I deal with this discomfort.
That is, you so have grasped the essence of it because it's like, you get into these what would seem to be uncomfortable places, and you experience them, and you're okay with it.
Yeah.
And that has a life lesson because when you're hungry, or when you're tired, or when you're upset or irritated, you just go, hey, you know, that's a sensation. That's just a physical sensation.
Mm-hmm.
It seems life-threatening, but it's not really.
It's not. and just don't like it. I desire something different.
And you'll get through it.
You'll get through it.
So you take away that, that's the spiritual aspect of yoga as well. It's not just a matter of, well, you know, I improved my DEXA scores. You also get to be, you know, perhaps a more patient person and a more focused and aware and in the moment person.
In the moment, more present, because it demands that you be present to deal with that which you're experiencing or feeling. Some people will even say during a yoga session or towards the end of it, they'll break out crying spontaneously or break out laughing, giggling, uncontrollably. A lot of stuff comes up, and I really have to wonder what else it does. Because, yeah, it does open up the meridians for chi and all of that. It keeps our cerebrospinal fluid happening and moving. It keeps us, our joints supple.
You know, what comes up for me
flexible.
Is interesting. It's not that, you know, like these deep emotions, but what comes up for me is like, I'm very much about proficiency. And, you know, I've said, why did you take up, water skiing or something? And I said, you know, I don't want to suck at yet another thing. A lot of me is about, you know, being accomplished and good at things.
Sure.
And in being a yoga novice, you have a beginner's mind, and you have to kind of be okay with maybe not being the most flexible or most proficient person in the class. Yeah. And that bothers me. But I have to be okay with that, because that's a limitation.
Yes.
You know, that I have this attitude about undertaking new things.
Yogis say that what makes us unhappy is our desires to be anything other than what we are right now, our desire to be more proficient, to do this perfectly, or to be less cold, or to be warmer, or anything. It's the desire that makes us uncomfortable.
That desire has propelled me through a professional career and through a competitive academic program.
Absolutely.
But it's actually done me a disservice in some ways because it can make you unhappy. You know, like it's never enough. It's never good enough.
Yeah. I don't mean to put desire as something bad, not at all. Mm-hmm. It's just that it's a little bit of a double-edged sword for many people.
Yeah.
And unless they're doing something perfectly, they're not going to do it at all. And that's
well, I didn't mean to get up on a philosophical bent with this,
but we can't help it.
Yeah, but so you improve your DEXA score, and then maybe there's some ancillary benefits in terms of spiritual growth.
It's good strength training for your bones, too.
Okay, so do yoga.
Do yoga.
All right, let's get to questions, please.
Okay, we have an email from Lorraine. I have COPD. Being treated with inhalers several times a year, I need a course of prednisone to help with shortness of breath. This exacerbates my heartburn. Mm-hmm. Now I have very uncomfortable, constant heartburn. No over-the-counter digestive products work, not Nexium, Zantac, Prilosec, Prevacid, Tums. I was given Manuka honey. I was given melatonin. What else can I do?
Okay, so let's break it down. In fact, in hospitals, often, when they give people high doses of prednisone, they immediately give them an acid blocker, because they know that prednisone breaks down the barriers in your gastrointestinal tract and makes you more prone to ulcers and GERD, reflux. Mm-hmm. So it has that side effect.
It's
known
the said of NSAID. It's not a non, it's a steroid. That's, and it's the ultimate
that's
powerful.
That's right. It is a anti-inflammatory drug, not a non-steroidal. It is a steroidal anti-inflammatory drug. So all those medications have GI effects, and particularly bad combinations. You take a little steroid, you take some Advil, not very bad, you know, because you really put a hole in your stomach. So it's even automatically that they put these people on these acid blockers. It's not even that helpful to prevent these symptoms. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you take it away from your repertoire of what to do for people with GERD.
Yeah, and it's Lorraine needs to take this prednisone several times a year.
Yeah.
A course of prednisone.
Can't avoid it.
No, can't avoid it. Lorraine, might I suggest to you taking, during that time, some Endofen, some DGL.
So tell us what Endofen is.
Endofen has marshmallow, slippery elm, some green tea, apple powder, astaxanthin. These are all to help repair the lining of the gut, the esophagus.
What company makes
system.
It? Is it Metagenics?
I think it's either Metagenics or Orthomolecular. Shoot.
Oh, it's Orthomolecular. I can look it up.
It might be Metagenics, however.
Okay.
The other thing I would do, Lorraine, is chew on some DGL. It's deglycerizated licorice. It's the licorice with the glycerizic acid removed, so it doesn't impact blood pressure. adversely. You could chew 6, 8, or 10 of these like candy anytime you're experiencing heartburn. The other thing is to get yourself on a GERD diet. And a GERD diet means eliminating a bunch of foods. We're talking about tomato products. We're talking about raw onions, garlic, other raw vegetables and fruits which may be problematic, like bananas, like cabbage, chocolate, mints.
Metagenics.
Is it Metagenics, the endorphin product? Yeah, taking Metagenics, the dose for this would be 2 tablespoons twice daily, mixed in a little water, enough to dissolve it, half a cup is perfectly fine. I would use water, not juice or anything like that.
It's wonderful. And then the other thing you can consider is get some aloe vera gel.
And Lily of the Valley.
Lily of the Valley
of
is
the
my
desert.
Preferred. Lily of the Desert,
the
I
desert.
Think. Lily of the Desert.
Lily of the Valley is something else, isn't it? Later. I think that's an herb or something. But the
Lily manufacturer. It is Lily of the Desert aloe vera gel. It's the best brand. Mm-hmm. And you take about a quarter cup on awakening and at bedtime because you want it in an empty stomach.
Yes.
And that has also a healing effect. Mm-hmm. Contains 200 biologically active components, many of which are anti-inflammatory. So it's good for burns. I mean, if you get a burn, you mm-hmm. have an aloe plant in your kitchen, you apply it, and it heals the skin. Well, you have internal skin in your mucous membranes that is healed by aloe.
Yeah.
Don't get aloe pills because they don't do the trick, and
don't do
aloe juice. The juice is too thinned out. And unfortunately, many brands put a lot of additives that are irritating. Mm-hmm. So Lily of the Desert is the brand that I like. By the way, you can get Endorphin, mm-hmm. and I believe you can get this aloe gel on FullScript, which is our online dispensary now. Mm-hmm. So sign up for FullScript and you can shop there for those products. DGL as well is available there.
Right. Lorraine, best of luck to you. We hope you feel better soon.
Yeah.
Okay.
And, as to just on another note, what helps COPD? Well, sometimes you need prednisone, but, lots of fish oil as an anti-inflammatory.
Yeah, we need to talk about COPD.
N-acetylcysteine mm-hmm. may be helpful, although one recent trial showed it was not that helpful.
Right. With COPD, we need to lower respiratory quotient, RQ. Eating a high-carb diet causes a lot of carbon dioxide mm-hmm. in the body. It's a byproduct of glycolysis, of a blood sugar burning
metabolism.
So
when people have these attacks, they breathe better when they take less carbs.
When they take less carbs. When you go on a lower-carb diet, your body produces less CO2. In COPD, the burden is also on getting rid of that CO2, on the exhale.
Exactly.
It's not just the inhale.
It's like global warming in your lungs.
Yeah.
Too much. too much CO2.
Exactly.
And then you feel the burn,
Right. So, Lorraine, going on a lower carb diet can help with the COPD. A lower carb diet, which is actually a higher fat diet.
Yeah, and one observation is I found if you have mild COPD, it doesn't make that much difference. If you have just a little, shortness of breath. But if you have really severe COPD and it's like you're really having trouble going a block without, stopping to rest because you're so breathless, that's where the respiratory quotient can really be more important.
Right.
Yeah. Where people actually have, those little devices you put in your finger and you look at the pulse ox that shows the blood saturation of oxygen. And when that's low, that's where that diet can actually pay off more.
Yeah. All right. We have a question from Doris. Thank you to you both. I've used strontium for several years with much success. I went off it.
For osteoporosis. Okay.
I went off it then for the next 4 to 5 years, and now I'm back to having osteoporosis again. I'm starting to take the strontium again. Is that a good idea?
Yeah, and so our experience with strontium is only for about 6 or 8 years, would you say?
Yeah,
mostly.
6 to 8 years.
And so what we have now is we have experience of women especially, but some men, who have been on it for 3, 4, 5 years, and they have seen great improvements in their bone density. And frankly, you don't need to be on it forever. If we see these improvements, if you're moving into the mildly osteopenic range, by that point, you know, you're almost normal for your age group, but you know, everybody's got a little less than optimal bone.
Right.
So you don't have to take it forever. It's in a sense, it is artificial. Yes, it's a natural thing, but it's at such a high dose that it's considered medicinal.
Yeah.
So, you know, just like with medicine, you may stop after a certain point. What we've seen is that some people backslide. Mm-hmm. And now we're just gaining experience with a second round of strontium where we do see the improvements begin again.
Yeah.
And so, you know, as we continue to observe patients, we'll have more of a sense of the advisability and success of a second round of strontium. Yeah. But so far, it looks good.
I wonder if Doris is taking the other things like Ostera, magnesium, vitamin D, vitamin K.
But I have to say, it is not uncommon for people when they stop strontium to start losing bone again.
Right, right.
And they, if they're taking all these other things and doing the right things, maybe they're doing yoga, you know,
yes.
Then we could maybe see certainly a slowing in the loss. And because you've already built up some reserve, you know, the loss is less consequential. You may go from a minus 1.2 to a minus 1.8. That's not so bad. You're not yet in the osteoporotic range.
Right, right.
You don't have to push the panic button yet. But if we start going back into the crossing the border again at osteoporosis, we may reinitiate that. Yeah. Another useful supplement that does work for this is ostinol,
yes,
which is bone morphogenetic protein. Mm-hmm. It is the only bad thing about ostinol is it can be pricey, but it is another for people who maybe they want to take a vacation from strontium. They can alternate. They can go 3 or 4 years on strontium and then they can begin ostinol for maintenance.
Another good idea, Doris, would be to have your DHEA sulfate levels
checked.
That's
important, too. Yep. You know, what I also want to say is there's some really good literature now on olive leaf extract and the oleoropein, which is in olive leaf extract, and some of the other beneficial polyphenols.
Yeah.
Mediterranean diet seems to protect against osteoporosis, and they've actually narrowed it down. Spanish researchers have demonstrated that the osteoblasts and osteoclasts are protected with olive leaf extract.
Wonderful.
So they've actually come up with a product that is basically olive leaf extract. It's called bone olive, B-O-N-O.
Bone olive.
It's an
good
ingredient.
Good olive, bone olive.
Well, but also bone olive.
Bone olive, yes.
But it's, like, you know, buongiorno, you know.
Yeah.
But it's kind of a cool name, but I don't think it's that different from just taking any kind of olive leaf extract. I don't think there's some magic to the bone olive that's different from taking an olive leaf extract.
Right.
It is an ingredient that's going to start popping up in some more supplements that are targeted to osteoporosis.
Yeah. Terrific. Terrific. Doris, thank you very, very much for your question. Good luck.
And you know, as I say, time flies when you're having fun, and we're into our time limit for part one. We divide these podcasts into two parts. So, Layla, give us a preview of what we're going to be tackling in part two.
How much vitamin K should I be taking?
Oh, okay. That's a very interesting
important question.
And we'll tackle that in the second part of today's Q&A with Layla. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with Layla Mudin. And you can send your questions. Please keep on sending them. We'll get to them eventually. Radioprogram@AOL.com. This is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.